देवियों वैष्णवेभ्यो ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय September 26, 2022, in Hillsborough, North Carolina, and we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 39, Text 32. Nananda Sunakshana Bhanga Soridam Samikshatena Swakrita Tarurbatam Vyayayayan Swajanan Sutanapatim Tatasya Mado Bhagatana Vapriya. Please check. This is verse. My records. Yes, this is verse 22, not 32. Thank you. Thank you very much. Nanda Sunahu. The son of Nanda Maharaja. Kshana, in a moment. Vanga, the breaking. Sohrida, of whose friendship. Samikshite, look upon. Nama, us. Swa, by him. Krita, made. Aturaha, under his control. Bata, alas. Vihaya, giving up. Yehan, our homes. Swajanan, relatives. Sutan, children. Patin, husbands. Tat, to him. Dasya, servitude. Adha, directly. Upagata, who have taken up. Nava, ever new, Priyaha, whose lovers. BBT translation. Alas, Nanda's son, who breaks loving friendships in a second, will not even look directly at us. Forcibly brought under his control, we abandon our homes, relatives, children, and husbands just to serve him, but he is always looking for new lovers. There's no BBT purport, and Srila Prabhupada doesn't have this verse in the Krishna book. I'm going to read Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. The gopi said, alas, alas, Krishna, the sole object of our love and the cause of our life is indifferent to us. Why are we blaming the Creator? How has he broken this very strong bond of love? Friendship broken in an instant cannot be real friendship. Although Krishna has brought us to the point of death, he does not even look at us. He has decided to go to Mathura for his own happiness, even though we will continuously cry and eventually die. To become Krishna's maidservants, we gave up our homes, husbands, and sons. But now he is giving us up and going away because he has new lovers, and we have become useless. And then this is the section that I'm going to focus on. And thus, in this life, we achieve nothing. For we have left our husbands and lost Krishna. And in the next life, we will suffer for having broken the laws of Dharma. So I'm going to read this last section again. Thus, in this life, we will achieve nothing, for we have left our husbands and lost Krishna. And in the next life, we will suffer for having broken the laws of Dharma. So why are they going to suffer in this life? Because they've lost Krishna, and they've also gave up their husbands. So they've given up their material life, so-called. I mean, not that they have any.
I turned it down because it looks like Oh, okay.
It's so loud it hurts.
Otherwise, I get notices from Anadi that it's
online, you mean?
Yeah, Anadi. If I'm not that loud, Anadi will send me a message and say
yeah,
I can't hear you.
This microphone here doesn't have anything to do with
so, online. Yeah, I can't please everybody. So they've given up their life in the world. What was the list? Anybody remember the list?
Husbands, sons, without
looking. What the other ones?
Relatives
and
house.
And that order they gave it. Anybody remember the order that they gave it in?
House.
Husbands. Nope. House, relatives, sons, husbands. And I'm not going to read Jiva Goswami and Sanatana Goswami's commentary, but they both say that that's in order of increasing intensity. Homes, relatives, children, and husbands. Okay, so Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is saying that the gopis' mood is we've given up everything materially, and we lost Krishna. So in this life, we don't have any material happiness, and we don't have any spiritual happiness. And we're going to suffer in our next life because we gave up Dharma. All right. Let's go back to the verse. Nananda sunakshana bangaso rida samikshate naswa krita tarurbata vihaya gehan swa janan sutam patims tadasyam ahopa gata navapriya. Alas, Nanda's son, who breaks loving relationships in a second, will not even look directly at us. Forcibly brought under his control. So what are they saying? It's all whose fault? It's all Krishna's fault. We abandon our homes, relatives, children, and husbands just to serve him, but he is always looking for new lovers. It's interesting, they're saying that he's going to Mathura to look for new women. So, Krishna had warned the gopis, actually, right, when they came for the Ras dance. This is 10:29:26. He said, for a woman from a respectable family, petty adulterous affairs are always condemned. They bar her from heaven, ruin her reputation, and bring her difficulty and fear. So Krishna had warned them, go home, right? Don't come to me. Go back to you. Don't give up your materialistic life. Go back to your homes. Go back to your children. Back to your husbands. Otherwise, you're going to suffer in this life and in the next. And of course, in Bhagavatam 10:31:17, the gopis, when they're lamenting, they talk about how they've given up everything for Krishna. Now, this problem that one will think, I've given up everything to take up Krishna consciousness, so I've lost my material life, and then I didn't get Krishna, so I've lost my spiritual life. Who else had this concern?
Arjuna.
Arjuna in 6:38. He says, Almighty armed Krishna, does not such a man who is bewildered from the path of transcendence fall away from both spiritual and material success and perish like a riven cloud with no position in any sphere. So it's a doubt. If it's a doubt that Arjuna had, it's not very astonishing that we might have this doubt. You know, if I give up everything in the world back in the 60s and 70s, joining the Hare Krishna movement meant that you dropped out of school, right? Like Shiva Ramaswamy had 2 weeks left to get his bachelor's degree in engineering, and metals engineering. And he just left. We left our families, right? Shiva Ramaswamy also, his wife said, well, I want to practice Krishna consciousness, but I don't really want to move in the ashram. He said, goodbye. Right, Tripurari Swami, he had a wife and a son. You don't want to practice Krishna consciousness, goodbye. This was the general mood that we did. Yes? That was what it was. You know, my poor mother was crying. Why don't you take a leave of absence from school, she said. No, I'm just quitting. You know, I dropped out of school, gave my father back the car he had given me, came to the temple with one little teeny tiny suitcase. I wasn't even sure if I was allowed to bring like shampoo, you know, I thought we were supposed to be really, really austere. You know, like some kind of a Buddhist monk who just carries everything in their little bag. But we may feel, well, I didn't get what I wanted. I'm in the process of reading a book by a Christian minister about whether or not you should stay a Christian, and I'm in the part of the book where he's telling you why you shouldn't, and the second part he's telling you why you should. And just yesterday I was reading where he was saying that people take up Christianity and a lot of times they don't get purified. And they try going, you know, this pastor, this festival, this thing, lots of time, lots of energy and money, and they don't change. And then there, after a while, they give up on that. I mean, I remember meeting a former member of ISKCON in Australia. He had become a drug addict and homeless drug addict. And he visited the temple and he said, you know, I used to be so serious. I used to go out every day on Harinam and book distribution for 10 years and I didn't lose all my material desires. It just doesn't work. And I gave up my life to become a devotee and now there's nothing. So we may think like that. I mean, there may be that doubt. Of course, we talked about material life. Material life, you don't gain anything anyway, do you? What do you gain? We've done this game before, right? All the material desires we've wanted, and we didn't get them. And then all the material desires we wanted, we got them, but they weren't actually what we wanted. We got the job, and then we didn't like the job. We married the person, and then we didn't like the person. We bought the house, then we didn't like the house. And then all the material desires we had, we got them, they were perfect, and they were temporary. The perfect pair of shoes, and they wear out, and the company doesn't make them anymore. Does that only happen to me? And there's nothing materially that we want, we get, it's perfect, and we get to keep it. Therefore, Prabhupada says, even if you're willing to compromise with misery, you don't get to stay here. So we don't really lose anything materially because we never have anything materially. Materially, it's always zero. Always. We always end up with nothing that we want, we get, it's perfect, and we get to keep it. There's nothing like that. And this is why Bali says to Sukracharya, better to give to the Lord that which I'm going to lose anyway. So I'm going to give it up anyway. Might as well give it to Krishna. So material life is, I'm sorry, but it's hopeless. It's just hopeless. We will never get what we want in materialistic life. So giving up materialistic life for Krishna is not losing anything. It's because it's already lost. And then we say, well, suppose we don't get Krishna. At least if we have material life, we have some kind of illusion. But if you come to Krishna and he leaves you, then what are you going to do? So Krishna says, actually, don't worry about this. Right? In 8:28 Bhagavad Gita, he says, a person who accepts the path of devotional service is not bereft of the results derived from studying the Vedas, performing sacrifices, undergoing austerities, giving charity, or pursuing philosophical and fruitive activities. Simply by performing devotional service, he attains all these, and at the end, he reaches the supreme eternal abode. And what we've seen practically in our own lives and in the lives of others is those who take up bhakti properly, and we have to say the key word is properly, that they find that the other, whatever desires they would have had in material life become fulfilled. I remember in the New York temple, 55th Street Temple, Tamal Krishnamurti was giving class, and the class was supposed to, wherever it was supposed to end, he went another 45 minutes over just answering questions of one young man who was visiting the temple for the first time. He kept asking these questions, and Tamal Krishnamurti's answers were so wonderful that 90% of the devotees stayed and let their breakfast get cold. But I remember one of the questions that this young man asked. He said, how will I fulfill all of my desires if I take up Krishna consciousness? And Tamal Krishnamurti said, well, what desire do you have? And he said, I'd really like to travel. And Tamal Krishnamurti, this was in New York, Tamal Krishnamurti said, so where have you traveled in the last year? He said, New Jersey and Connecticut. And the whole room just cracked up, and Tamal Krishnamurti said, would you like me to tell you where I've traveled in the last year? And what we do see practically is that the essence of what we want in this world, we will find in Krishna. Just like people might say, well, I want a lot of money, but money in and of itself is useless. People want money because it gives them what?
Security.
Security. They even call it that, right? You buy stocks, they call it security. What?
Comforts
and pleasures. What else?
Freedom.
Freedom. Right? When I was traveling for 5 years without a base, I used to say to Krishna, Krishna, please always let me have enough money for an airplane ticket. So if I don't like where I am, I can get on a plane. Right? So security, pleasure, comfort, freedom, status. Yes? Your basic needs taken care of. And so I asked people, suppose you had all that. Suppose you had complete security, complete comforts and pleasures, complete freedom, social status, without money. Would you need money? And they're like, no. So when we say that all your material needs are taken care of, we don't necessarily mean externally. But the reason one wants things in this world becomes satisfied. And we experience that directly. We experience that Krishna takes care of everything. Yogakshema vahamyaham. Again, not necessarily in the external ways. But materialistic people don't have a guarantee of that either, do they? If you work hard materially, are you guaranteed you're going to be rich and healthy and a perfect family and all these things? And no. So it's not that externally, but one's feeling of having one's needs met. And having one's needs met, param drisvant nivartite, should be there. And if it's not there, we're doing something wrong. Srila Prabhupada would give the example that when we're eating, we should be satisfied. Isn't it? If you're eating actual, healthy, real food, you should be satisfied. He said, if you say, I'm eating, but I'm not satisfied, then either you're not eating. Like chewing gum, you're going through, you look like you're eating, you're salivating, you're masticating, but you're not actually eating. Or he said, you're eating real food, but then there's parasites in the stomach. And just the other day, I was hearing a class where Prabhupada said, you know, if you're not finding going to Mangal Arati is fresher and newer every day, that means you're doing it as some stereotyped ritual. I'm paraphrasing. He said, your experience should be that Krishna consciousness is newer and fresher every day. Otherwise, we're not, there's something wrong. We're committing sin on the strength of chanting, or we're offending devotees, or we're holding on to some attachments. Something is not right there. But if we're doing Krishna consciousness right, near yogakshema atmavan, we don't have to worry about our material life. Krishna will naturally provide it, yogakshema vahamyaham. So then we can say, all right, well, what's going on here with the gopis? Why are they expressing this? That we gave up everything for you, and now you're leaving, and so our life is finished materially and spiritually, and next life also is finished, right? So what they're expressing is not really the doubt of Arjuna. Although it looks like it superficially, what they're expressing is this aspect of rasa with Krishna that Rupa Goswami describes for each of the rasas. And that is this interplay between meeting and separation. Now, I find it very interesting in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami describes the five components of rasa, what stimulates rasa, rasa means a taste, a pleasure. Everything we're doing, Prabhupada says in the preface for Nectar Devotion, is we're trying to enjoy some kind of pleasure. And because Krishna, it's because Krishna is Akhila Rasamrita Murtihi, that he's the source of all rasa, that when we properly take up Krishna consciousness, whatever we would have tried to enjoy in this world actually becomes satisfied because we're tasting real rasa. So the components of real rasa are our basic relationship with Krishna, in Sanskrit called the sky bhav, what stimulates that, in Sanskrit called the vibhav, how we express that voluntarily, in Sanskrit called the anubhav, how we express it involuntarily, like hair standing on end and crying, called the sattvic abhavs, and the various varieties of emotions that come, the vyavichari bhavs. So Rupa Goswami describes each of those five in a general way, and then he takes each of the main relationships, neutrality, servitorship, friendship, parental, and conjugal, and he describes for each of those five the five components of rasa, or taste, or pleasure, related to those relationships. And at the last part is when he describes for each of those five meeting and separation. So he describes a meeting and separation for neutrality, he describes it for servitorship, and each of them have a little different permutation of meeting and separation. So what the gopis are experiencing here is within this taste, this impending separation. So I wanted to look a little bit more deeply in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Rupa Goswami describes these somewhat briefly, especially for the Madhurya Ras, especially for the conjugal Ras. For the other four Rasas, he describes it much more in depth. And the reason he describes it very briefly for the conjugal Ras and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is that it's more confidential, that it's not really that attractive to those in the other rasas, and because he has a whole other book where he describes those in depth, which is the Ujjvalanini Mani. So there he describes that there are, it's interesting, in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he only describes three types of separation for those in conjugal ras, and in Ujjvalanini Mani he describes four. So those are purvarag, a type of separation ostensibly before one has ever met Krishna, mana, which is separation due to seeming anger, prema vaichittam, which is a sense that Krishna is absent when he's actually right in front of you, and pravasa, separation by distance, which is what we're dealing with here in today's verse. Of course, it's an impending separation by distance. And Rupa Goswami explains that when one's basic relationship with Krishna of love, called the rati, when it becomes rasa by a mixture of these other elements. Kind of like, let's say you're making a smoothie and your basic ingredient is a banana. But and when you add all the other things together, it becomes a smoothie. Is that kind of clear? So the basic thing is the rati. And you add these other things and you mix them up and then they become rasa. So when they become rasa, then separation nourishes this general love, and therefore separation itself can also be called a rasa. Separation be called a taste. Materially speaking, separation from our beloved is usually just painful. But even materially, we find that separation from a beloved can increase our feeling of love and flavor, isn't it? Yes? We have some idea. I like that. Actually, it was just occurred to me. When I was a teenager, there was this song called Leaving on a Jet Plane, you know, wait for me, I'll be back. And that nobody would make a song about that unless there was some flavor in it. You understand? Like Prabhupada said, everything we do is to try to enjoy rasa. And I've never been a country western fan, but I understand they have a lot of songs like that. You know, you've left me, when are you coming back? Why has my love left me? And again, if there was no rasa in it, people wouldn't sing them. Or all the blues songs are like that. Oh, my love has left me. When will I see them? They're separated. They're in another country. We got angry. Right? So there is actually some pleasure, and especially it's pleasure because it nourishes the meeting. Right? If the best part of having a fight with your beloved is making up after the fight. So it nourishes the meeting again. So I want to look basically just at two types of separation, the purva rag and the pravasa. And I want to look at these two, pravasa because it applies to today's verse, and purva rasa because there's some aspect of that that's present for all of us as practicing devotees. This sense, because Srila Prabhupada would say over and over and over again, that we should be practicing bhakti in a mood of separation. And the only mood of separation we can practice as sadhakas is this purva rag. This sense that I'm having a separation of Krishna without having met him. So this ecstasy of this separation can come about by seeing or by hearing. So by seeing a picture of Krishna, or by seeing the deity of Krishna, by having a dream about Krishna, right? Or in the case of the gopis, by directly seeing Krishna as he's walking around Vrindavan. I really like that this purva rag ecstasy can be invoked by hearing, because that's one of our main practices of bhakti. And Rupa Goswami says, hearing from bards, from poets. So what's the better poet than Sukadeva Goswami? So as we're hearing from Sukadeva Goswami, as we're hearing from Srila Prabhupada, as we're hearing from Rupa and Sanatan and Jiva about Krishna, we can develop this happiness of when will I see Krishna? Of hearing songs from messengers. And I was thinking a lot of the songs of our acharyas, like from Bhakti Vinod, Narottama Das Thakur. Of hearing from our friends. Yesterday we had a little meeting of the ladies and we were singing these wonderful songs about Krishna. And especially the last song we sang, for Bhakti Vinod, I was feeling some little bit, oh, it'd be nice to be with Krishna. Huh? And Rupa Goswami says, so who feels this separation ecstasy first, Krishna or his beloveds? Now this is also interesting, because Krishna is also feeling this ecstasy of separation before meeting. Of course, this is described wonderfully in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita when Gopakumar goes to Vaikuntha and Lord Vishnu says to him, I was dancing like a fool, wondering in life after life, when are you going to come home? Krishna is also feeling this separation. It's not that he's just like callous. No? Oh yeah, they wanted to suffer in the material world. Oh well, too bad on them. I am having fun. Krishna is feeling for each of us, every single jiva, when will I see that devotee? When will I see that devotee? The characteristics of this purva rag are great longing, agitation, inability to sleep, thinness, lamentation, dullness, intolerance of disturbance, paleness, heat, unconsciousness. Sometimes great effort to see Krishna, glorification of Krishna. Sending messages to Krishna. I was really thinking about this, like in this material world, when some husband or boyfriend is separated from their wife or girlfriend, they send messages to each other, isn't it? Right? Or sending garlands to each other, sending gifts, sending messages. As all these people, you know, their husband or their beloved was fighting a war, and they sent letters back and forth, and they keep all of these letters. So we can also send messages to Krishna. Yes, can we send messages to Krishna? And is he sending messages to us? I mean, the Bhagavad Gita is Krishna's message to us. Isn't it? Yes? Our singing of bhajans, our singing of prayers, our chanting, is our message to him. And then looking at this pravasa, which is what the gopis are experiencing in today's verse, there's two kinds of separation by distance. Now, of course, separation by distance from Krishna, from an ontological perspective, makes no sense. And in fact, Krishna makes this point in terms of jnana in Uddhava's letter to the gopis, and in terms of yoga, when he personally sees the gopis at Kurukshetra. He says, I'm never separated from them. And we talked a little bit about this yesterday also, that we can feel that Krishna mayatatamidam savam jagadavyaktamurtina matsani sarabhutani nachaham te savaktita, that Krishna is everywhere in the light of the sun. The sun is coming up. In the sounds, right? Where there's some motor sounds in this room. Krishna says, I'm the sound of ether. I'm the life of all that lives. What is it? For one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I never lost to him, nor is he ever lost to me. So in one sense, there's no question of separation by distance. Still, there's Krishna in his personal form. So separation by distance is caused, by somebody leaving. And generally it's Krishna leaving. And then there's intentional leaving and unintentional leaving. Now, for those of you who may think this is very technical, I was having a long talk with one of my four-hour talk with one of my grandsons the other day about, can we say a particular religion is objectively better? Now, I was right there in the room where Prabhupada said, any religion that's teaching you to know and love God, we accept that. However, how many religions teach this degree of understanding of what does it mean to love God? So I'm not just a member of, not just a Krishna devotee because I like Krishna, although I do like Krishna, and I subjectively think it's better. That's true. But this understanding in the Bhagavatam, in the Bhagavad Gita, by our acharyas like Rupa Goswami, we have to just say objectively that it's not matched anywhere in the world. Certainly you can come to this understanding by revelation if you're a Christian or you're a Muslim, whatever. Krishna can reveal these things to you. But how much easier is it when our acharyas actually give us this information? So intentional and unintentional. Intentional is when Krishna goes to do some other duty or to please some other devotee. Unintentional is when a demon comes and disturbs him. And then Krishna can go a little distance, like to another part of Vrindavan, or he can go very far, like to Mathura or Dwarka. This feeling of separation can be felt by remembering Krishna going someplace in the past. It can be felt in the present, which is what the gopis are feeling in this verse. Krishna is leaving right now. He's in the process of leaving. Or it can be felt in the future. I'm worried about how Krishna is going to leave. And again, when Krishna is at a distance, just like in the separation by Purvarag, when Krishna is at a distance, he's sending messages back and forth. And we have the message with Uddhava, but there's our acharyas describe many, many other times that Krishna is sending messages back and forth to his beloveds. And in this separation by distance, there's absorption and thinking of Krishna, again, not sleeping, sometimes meaningless chatter like we find with Radharani and the bee, and sometimes fainting. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Gopakumara describes when Krishna leaves Vrindavan and goes to Mathura, that even in the spiritual world, Krishna is always coming and going. He says, why don't we all go to Mathura with Krishna? Why do we stay in Vrindavan in separation? And he said, it is because being in Vrindavan in separation dances on the heads of all other happiness. And my dear friend Gopakumara became a king on earth. He had become Indra, ruler of the heavenly planets. He'd become one of the main Prajapatis. He'd become one of the great mystic yogis like the four Kumaras. He'd become Lord Brahma, the leader of the universe. He'd experienced all the subtle pleasures in all of the layers of the universe. He'd experienced the pleasure with Lord Shiva. He'd experienced the unlimited pleasures of Vaikuntha, the unlimited pleasures of Ayodhya, of Dwarka, and of Vrindavan, And yet he said that this feeling of separation from Krishna in Vrindavan dances on the heads of all other happiness. So we should not be afraid of giving up what we never had and the illusion of which we're going to lose anyway. Because what we will find in Krishna will satisfy all of our desires, even if apparently Krishna is coming and going. Thank you very much. Yes, Vivian.
I have a question. Can you talk a little bit about the detrimental effects of offering?
The detrimental effects of aparad are primarily that one loses one's taste. Kind of like one of the symptoms of the original COVID form. You know? Right? The first, I don't think that's so much true with the new variants, but the original COVID, you lost your taste. Thank you, Krishna, I didn't experience that. What?
And the implications.
The implications of you losing your taste.
No,
of aparad. The implications of aparad is that you really do experience this thing that we're afraid of. When we commit offenses, especially against devotees, that's when we experience this thing. That I've given up my material life, and maybe I can't even enjoy the illusion of material life anymore. But spiritual life starts to become like cardboard for me. It has no flavor. But he had obviously
done
so much, but then there's no, the flavor becomes distorted and or gone, and one feels that one has nothing anyway. And then you end up committing even more offenses, yes, because you tend, what you tend to do is blame others for your lack of taste. When you have no taste, you blame others, and then you commit more offenses. Yes, it is. It's like the mad elephant that tramples your whole garden. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Jai. Jai.